From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Along with the track after.
Well, here we are. We're back. We made it back from our big weekend away. It is The Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And we are here on Thursday, the 13th of June, 2019, to talk to you all about board games, card games, role-playing games, but particularly this evening, we're going to be talking to you about the convention on the border that is known as BorderCon, where we spent last weekend for 4 days, and we played so many games.
Well, some of us did, yes. So, yes, we went to BorderCon yet again. As you know, every year we like to go on and on and on about it because it just gives us content for a very, very long time.
It will. Welcome to the Dice Men Cometh for episode 263?
No, 64,
yeah.
264 of Australia's most professional,
yep.
Not tired,
yep.
And definitely not suffering from technological issues.
No, not a technical issue for all those years until now, funnily enough.
Who'd have thought? Garth behind the controls, I don't know.
Those buttons were amazingly pushed. The microphone, not so much.
Yeah.
Anywho, I'm sick.
Yeah,
I'm still sleepy.
I'm still injured and on all sorts of painkillers, but hey, it made for some interesting games.
Yes. Oh, did it ever. And I guarantee you that Sunday will go down as one of the best gaming days of the year or eternity. And Leon, we'll get you to talk about it later on when we do a little bit of a synopsis about the BorderCon that was.
I can talk about it for hours.
Yes, yes, you will, but before we get to that, we need to throw to a song so we can compose ourselves, get ourselves settled down, and before even we go and talk about the goodness, the gracious, the me that was BorderCon, we're going to talk about a Kennerspiel nominee that's been getting a whole bunch of hype. And does it live up to it? Well, you'll have to listen after this particular song. You with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3. FM.
Hey, it's Bo. Board games are cool, and you should listen to The Dice Men Cometh. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Ugly Little Girls with Storm After Storm here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You are listening to The Dice Men Cometh. We've successfully returned from our massive 4-day weekend away playing games. We're going to tell you all about that weekend soon.
Was it 4 days?
It was four days, Leon. And just settle down. Get all your notes about Sunday together.
Yeah, all right, okay. Yep.
But first, Garth, why don't you tell us a little bit about this game that is riding the hype train around the world millions of times as we speak?
Yes. We are, of course, talking about The Span That Wings, or Wingspan, published by Stonemaier Games and, more importantly, designed by Elizabeth Hargrave, with artists Anna Maria Martinez Jaramillo.
Yeah.
Natalia Rojas, or Rogers, and Beth Sobel.
Yes.
So this is an all-female group of designers and artists come together to make Wingspan.
Yeah.
And it has got a lot of positive publicity because of the fact that the whole design and the whole artistic is fully led by females. What is this particular game you talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is a tableau-building, card-drafting collection game with pretty eggs and a nice dice tower that is a bird's nest or a bird feeder.
Birdhouse. Put a little birdhouse in your soul.
And you'll immediately look at this game, and if you are at BorderCon, you will not be able to turn your head without seeing this particular game because it was kind of on a lot of tables.
Yeah, before we walked in the door, we said, well, what's going to be the game that's going to be on more tables than anything? And the fact is, it was probably still Terraforming Mars, to be honest, but then it was either Quacks of Quedlinburg or Wingspan.
Correct. So, what is Wingspan for those of you playing at home who do not know? Well, It's a game about birds, and more importantly, North and South American birds, because presumably there will be bird expansions with more birds from the various continents and bird-related areas of the world.
There is certainly a lot of opportunities for expansions.
There we go.
Get the count up. That's one.
One. Count them. One bird pun.
Lovely.
This game is going to be played out over four rounds. You are going to start the very first little part of this game with your individual player board, which will have virtually nothing on it apart from a whole bunch of instructions, which are quite simple to understand. You will have play a bird, you'll have get food, you'll have lay eggs, you'll have draw bird cards, and they will be indeed the four things that you on your turn will be able to do. And that's pretty much it. You'll start by having five birds randomly drawn by you or assigned to you, where you get to choose as many of those as you want, as long as you can feed them. And you'll be able to do that because you also are kind enough to start the game with five different types of food, of which there is fish or invertebrates or fruit or seeds or rodents. Mm. So for every bird card you decide to keep, you throw out one of those. And then everyone's ready to go. So round one, everyone starts with eight actions. Round two will go seven actions. Round three will go six. And then round four will go five actions, because you'll be spending each of those cubes at the end of each round to sort of track your progress along a couple of end game scoring tracks.
And now, let me jump in. Firstly, just on that action countdown mechanism.
Mm.
I was trying to think about another game where the actions basically count down the game. And I can't think of another one. The only one that vaguely comes to mind, which was another game we played on the weekend, is where with Architects of the West Kingdom, where you've got a whole bunch of workers and you're placing worker and worker. You've got, you start off with 20-odd and you place one each turn and you're building them up. But it's not the same in that they aren't counting down the game, because you do have ways of getting your workers back in that game. So,
yeah, Leon, you'll have to try that.
Can you think of anything?
You'll have to try Architects one day, Leon.
I will have to try Architects one day. It looks like an absolute belter. Not off the top of my head. I think I'm getting this confused with another game I played at the con. Is this the game where... No, I had a confusing weekend. But as you go through the game, you get less and less turns each round.
Yes.
That is Wingspan.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a good mechanism, I think, for games. How many of them, once you get that engine building going, where the last two rounds can take the length of the entire game before.
Yes.
Whereas this, it goes, you've got your engine going, you should relatively know what you're looking for, but you've got slightly less actions, which makes those last ones really powerful and impactful, but it doesn't overextend its time at the table, which I think is a very good thing. The other game that does it, which I was confused with, was Teotihuacan Tuihea.
Correct.
Yes, which also does a very similar thing.
Yeah, okay. As does Underwater Cities, which was possibly our first game of the con. You play four rounds, and then three rounds at the end, so it sort of, again, minimises the chance for the last round taking an eternity. But this game is not long.
No.
Like, it says 40 to 70 minutes on BGG. You could, after a couple of players, get this down to half an hour if you're playing with two, maybe three players.
Mm, easily.
However, on the flip side of that, this game
on
does go
side.
Up there too.
Yep.
Oh, come on. It does whinge about it.
Three. It does go to five, and that's where it will, especially if you're doing five at the start of your Wingspan learning career, it will go long. So don't do that. Anyway, on your turn, you will only get a chance to do that one particular thing, play a bird, feed a bird, lay some bird eggs, or get some food from the bird feeder. And as you say, in the first round, you get eight actions, second one, seven, so on, so on, so on. So, why is it fun? Well, it's fun because you get to control how your particular tableau of birds, of which there are three types. There are ones that can go in the forest, which is your top row. There are ones that can go in the grasslands, which is your middle line. And there are ones that can go in the wetlands. Or there are ones that can go in maybe two of those, or three.
Yeah.
So you can
really... your habitat.
You can really your bird environment to be exactly the way that you want it to be.
Yes.
Now, there's also several different types of birds. There are predatory birds, which might go, caw-caw, now and snack and kill some things.
That's a different game, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are non-predatory birds. There are ones that will have special abilities. There are ones that have no abilities.
Flocking birds?
Oh, my
those
God.
Flocking birds?
There are a flockload of those birds as well. So the point is that there are, admittedly, not a huge amount of cards, but there are a lot of different special abilities that different birds will have.
Yes.
And there's a hell of a lot of unique art, which no doubt, Mark, you will get to at some point.
Mm.
So what I might do if I choose to play a bird, which is probably how most people are going to start maybe the first one or two turns in this, you play a bird by being able to provide its food cost and paying that to the central supply. So I'll have a little blue-footed booby, and it'll be the eating worms, invertebrates. And I just pay a worm, stick it in the wetland, because a wet-footed booby is a water bird. Boom, it's now there in my tableau forever.
Yeah.
When I place that bird, it might have an on placement activation. So it might do something. It might allow me to collect a worm, or it might allow me to do some other ability.
Yeah, it's very similar to Machikoro in the sense that when you put it down, it could either trigger something straight away, or trigger something on your next turn, or trigger something on your opponent's other turn.
Yeah.
And there's colour-coded in that way to keep you reminded on what ones you need to pay close attention to.
Correct. Now, the most that you'll ever be able to place, I believe, is 15. Does that sound about right? Is
yep.
it three rows of five?
Yes. Yes, I think you're right. Yeah.
The thing is, they'll all become more expensive as you place them. You always start in your left hand and you move yourself to the right. So your first row of forest and wetlands and grassland birds are always going to be free. The next row are then going to cost you an egg, which means you've got to make sure that your first row of birds, they get laying, because otherwise you're not going to be able to expand your bird farm into, you know, a massive flock of birds if you haven't got eggs. So on each bird card, it will tell you what type of nest it has and also the maximum amount of eggs that it can hatch.
And also every single egg that you get and put on your birds, which are always on the board, you don't have any just sitting in your reserve, they are all worth victory points. Mm. So it comes down to that decision of, do I need to build up the flocks in the different areas that I have, or do I just need to hold on to those eggs? Because every point, and like all these games, matters.
Although, you do not want to put all your eggs in one basket.
That's another one.
It can be an excruciating decision. So, if I play a bird, it'll either cost me some food, or it'll cost me some food and some eggs, depending on how far along my track it'll be. But you also get some other abilities. If I play a bird in the top row, and the top row is also where I get to get food for my birds.
Yes, yeah, that's the feeding row.
It'll give me certain bonuses. So instead of taking one food, I might be able to take two food. That's pretty amazing because I've got more birds to feed. I'm building birds here.
Now, did we mention that the food comes from these big, woody, wooden, chunky dice that you roll?
No, you don't. You do not roll them.
They roll through the dice tower that comes with this game, which is a birdhouse.
Yeah.
And it is very much an eye catcher on
the
table.
Yeah, absolutely.
It looks fantastic. You have to have a little bit of dexterity to make sure that these really big chunky dice get nicely sort of slotted in the little bit of a hole at the back of the dice tower to make it work. So with clumpy man hands, it might be a little bit tricky, or it might not be, depending on dexterity skills.
I had no issue with the small girlish fingers.
Yeah, well, that's good. So you roll dice. There are, as I say, five things. And the rules around the food is that you can always take one, but if there's only one type of food left, you can choose to roll all of the dice and start again so that you'll almost always get what you want, except if you're playing in our game where there didn't seem to be any rodents for my poor barn owl to eat.
Mm.
So lay birds, get food. Second action is your middle row where you get to just simply lay eggs.
Yep.
And it'll tell you how many eggs you're able to lay on any given turn. It might be one, two, three, or four, depending on how further along your birds are in that middle row from left to right. As you go right, 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 your birds will lay more eggs. And as you say, Leon, those are all worth victory points, but you do have to spend them for putting more birds out on your tableau, or maybe triggering the ability of a bird, or maybe something else. And then the last action you can do is just draw bird cards, which is get more cards into your hand so that you can hopefully find the right bird to match the food that you've been able to get that might trigger an ability that you've already got. And that's your decision. On your turn, am I going to play a bird? Am I going to get some food? Am I going to lay some eggs, or am I going to simply get more cards to keep on getting this engine going?
Yeah.
And that's it.
But it does. I love the way that it builds, because as you get more birds in the particular row, so in your wetlands or in your grasslands or in your
forest
lands, you then you get to do a more powerful type of action. So you might start off getting 2 eggs, then you might get 4 eggs, then you might get 6 eggs. Or if you're drawing cards, you might get to draw 2 cards or 3 cards and pay an egg to draw another card. Or if you might get, you get 1 bit of food and then 2 bits of food and 3 bits of food as your birds go across. And then you've got those
Bird abilities,
and in particular the brown actions. So we talked about there are actions that trigger when you play the bird. There are actions that trigger when other things happen. But for a lot of the birds, they have the brown ability, which is when you choose that row is going to be the row you're going to do, then you go along from right to left, and each bird's brown action,
if it has one,
will trigger. And so there's a great ability to set up little combos where one brown action might give you some eggs, and then the next brown action, if you set it up right, you know, turns eggs into something or multiplies the eggs, or the combinations are almost endless.
Lovely. There's also a little round tracker that goes into the middle of the board, and that's going to have, I believe, 4 tokens on it, which are 4 little things that you can aim for at the end of each round of the game, which is something that a lot of games, if they don't have it, they definitely should, because when you first get into a game like this, which is very kind of a point salad-y type thing, you don't know what to aim for. You don't know what's really good.
Mm.
But with that in the middle, you can go, okay, I know if I get to the most eggs in the wetlands by the end of this chapter, I could get 6 points, and I'm going towards that from my other strategy anyway, so I'll go towards that. Now, they're not humongous amount of points. They're probably not game winners, but they give you something to aim for, which is a nice touch, because you've also got your secret cards, which have different things you're looking to do,
yeah,
as well as other ones of those you can pick up throughout the game, as well as other end-game scorings, like I said, having just the most eggs just in general, and all that kind of stuff builds up. So everything you do on your turn, sometimes you might say roll the dice, you might not get the exact food you want, but chances are you end up using that food. I mean, any 2 random food becomes a wild you can use anyway.
Mm. Correct.
So it is one of those games where you can always generally do something positive on your turn. You don't spend many turns. Like we've talked for years about how when I first played Terraforming Mars, which people have compared this game to, like they've said, like it's a light version of Terraforming Mars, kind of. I didn't like that game at all because I'd spent like 5 or 6 turns in a row once and I just got next to nothing based off randomness and chance and probably my own strategy and everything else. But that put me in just a negative space for that game for ages. Whereas in this, I don't think that could probably happen because you always got something. And at the worst, even if you're just getting these abilities and getting cards and getting things, sooner or later, something will pay off whether you want it to or not, which is a nice thing.
And when you're playing your birds, as we were saying during the game, you know, I'm going to build a bird and playing food, you have birds that just cost you 1 piece of food to play. They'll be a little bird. You have birds that might cost you 2 food or even 3 food to play. Usually that referred to, I think, the size of the bird, but also in a lot of cases the victory points as well, because each bird is worth more in the hand than it is in the bush. But each bird is worth a certain number of feather points on the side of thing, which is part of your victory points at the end of the
game. Yeah, which another thing I was going to say that, yeah, as you said, anytime you play a card, even if you don't really know, this ability is not that great and I don't know really what's going on, but it's got like 8 victory points on it, so why not? It could be a strategy alone by doing that. And all the different bits of information on the card I think is a very nice touch. Like there are things like it shows you the bird's wingspan, how the distance of the wings from one tip to the other.
Yeah.
And there are certain special like hidden cards that say like collect 5 birds that have over 100 centimeter wingspan and things like that. And
there's cards like Mark had, isn't there?
Yeah.
That he got to, you'd get to draw a random bird card, and if its wingspan was less than something or other, his predator bird ate that little bird.
Well, some of those predatory abilities where you're actually eating other birds, and mine was if the bird was below a certain size, then my eagle would eat them, which means I stack the card underneath, and again at the end of the round, it's worth points. And then you've got the flocking birds where you just, when you play that flocking bird, you just basically take another bird and stick it underneath. And again, they're worth points at the end of the game.
Yeah,
all those little combos.
And then you've got things like, you know, collect a certain amount of North American birds or South American birds or this kind of, you know, like you said, the wetlands birds, or the one I had when I first played was collect a certain amount of birds that have colour in their description.
Yeah, or so, a geographical type name.
Yeah, so it is good in the sense that, and we'll probably talk about this in a minute, probably in a negative kind of sense, that there's not heaps of interaction with other people in this game, except for those cards you have that like, oh, somebody laid some eggs, I get an egg as well. But there could be certain things that I have a certain amount of special abilities that I'm trying to get, special scoring. Maybe the ones you're getting could contradict each other.
Yes.
So you might want that one because it's a North American word, but I might be gunning for it because it's got a colour in its name as well. So that adds a one little layer of interaction because, sadly, there's not that much of it.
Well, let's switch this from what you play to how you play and then, obviously, our impressions of it. So, look, this game, arguably, either lives up to expectations for you when you sit down and you look at it and you go, wow, this is amazing, so you're prepared to be amazed, or you sit down with a critical eye and you go, wow, this does look really pretty, let's see what the game is, or you don't bother sitting down at all.
Yeah, it's a visual masterpiece in terms of the dice tower, the birdhouse that we mentioned, the art on the cards and all the little factoids, the little eggs that look like...
candy.
Little candy eggs. But, you know, and they've got a tiny little sort of flat bit on the bottom so they sit. The trays in the box that everything stacks in, and the tray that the three cards that you have out there to draw from also is the lid of the tray. It's just... Look, could they have done anything more to make this game as any more aesthetically pleasing? I don't think they could.
From a production value, no, really. I don't think there's anything you could... like.
Well, without being ridiculous and putting in components that cost a fortune.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the boards that you get are just like bits of cardboard where you put the birds and stuff. They could have them certainly slotted and made of plastic and stuff. Again, it would have cost a fortune. But from a base game, there's nothing here where straight away you open the box and go, oh, well, this bit of kit just needs to be taken out, or we need to upgrade this because it's rubbish. It looks good and it all is very practical. As you said, there's that thing in the middle of the board where the three birds sit, which is kind of like the bird shop, if you will. It sits up atop a little bit from the table you're on for a reason, so you can easily grab that card straight off. How many times have we played games on normal everyday tables or even on nice felt where there's a card and you're just putting your hands and you're just trying to get a card and it's just not working?
You don't want claw marks all over.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Whereas this, you just whoop, straight off and straight on. So little touches like that can make a big difference.
Correct. So it looks pretty.
Yes. It certainly does.
All right. Well, that's a big tick. Not against it, but for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
Now it's quick, theoretically, which is good because games are vying for your precious gaming time.
Yep.
And are you going to be able to dedicate 40 minutes to 70 minutes for a game about birds if that's your thing? Yeah, of course you can. If it was a two-hour game, no, you probably wouldn't. Mm. So that's good. It's positive. Gameplay. This is probably where the Dice Men have a schism, a difference of opinion, not just one way or two way, but three entirely different ways. So who wants to go first?
Well, Mark...
Leon.
Me?
You want to go first? Cool.
No, I said Mark. No, because I'm going to speak on the way of positivity.
Yep.
Because I'm just Captain Positive. If you ever meet me in person, you know that I'm just Captain... especially Bordercon weekend.
Well, especially on Sundays.
Oh, yes.
You on a Sunday.
Captain Positive.
Can't wait for the story.
No, anyway, so I played this. I sat down with a friend, Leah, and our friend from Queensland, John. One of the two Johns. It was one of the first games I played. We played a three-player game of it, which BGG recommends is the best number, and... I've only played this once, but I'm going to take a stab and say, yes, it is the best number. Four, maybe, five. Again, I talked about it on the car ride back. We've got to have a whole chat one day about these games that play 1 to 5 because they're either you have to play it at 5, like a Cosmic Encounter, never play that less than 5, that'd be ridiculous, or no, this is a 4 or 3-player game. 5 is just, you've just added an hour for no real reason. Anywho, so we played a 3-player game of this, and it definitely, I didn't really have any expectations for this. I'd heard that, you know, it's Stonemaier. They don't really go wrong. I'd heard about the credibility of the people, the designers behind it, and I was like, that's cool. Sat down to play it, wasn't too sure. And then I got the end of it, and I thought, I think I could happily own this game because it ticks a lot of boxes. It does everything relatively well. The interaction between players isn't much. However, as you said, from a time perspective, this was a learning game where two of us had never touched this game. Leah had, and she taught it to us, and she hadn't played it for a couple of months herself. We played it in 45 minutes, I think. For a game that's less than an hour, it's not the end of the world that there's not heaps of interaction between the players. Would I like it to be there? Sure. Will an expansion for this game come out? Definitely. Will it probably add that? probably most likely. But it does all the things that it does relatively well, and I think it's a very good, solid base game. I will compare it, again, to Terraforming Mars in the sense that a lot of people have said it's kind of like Terraforming Mars light in the sense that all the different things that you can do. When Terraforming Mars first came out and everyone was over the moon about it, saying this is the greatest game ever, one of my...
Mars is over the moon?
Yeah. One of my... Don't act all cuckoo on me. That's one, hey! One for me. One for me. That's just the one for me. That's me done. Yeah, people were going nuts for it. And my one of my biggest criticism was, okay, it does lots of stuff relatively well, but it does nothing new at all. It just does a few things really well. Wingspan, I do think, is the kind of the same. I think it does a lot of things really well. Does it do anything brand spanking new? No. So if you're looking into this game and people have said, oh, it's the game of the year, anytime someone says that, you're looking for a revolution. You're looking for creativity. You're looking for something you've never had before. I do not think you'd find it in this game if you've played lots of games in this hobby. But I think it is a solid start, and for the time that you can play it and for what it looks like and the different components of it and replayability, I think it is worth a crack.
Yeah, look, I've found that there's plenty of interesting...
Is that a crack? Are we, is that like a...
Yes, I think... Yeah.
A quack.
Yeah.
Look, I find there's lots of interesting decisions to be made on the plus side. As I said, you know, it is gorgeous to look at. There can be interaction and, you know, often you talk about with Euro games where once you've had your turn, you switch off and you're basically waiting till it comes back to your turn again. Now, in this game, there's no board state that changes, so it's not something... The board is not something you have to keep an eye on because there is no board. But there are lots of cards that have abilities that will trigger when other people do certain things. So I had a bird that whenever someone else played a water bird, I got a fish because my spoonbill was over there spooning out some more fish from somewhere for some thematic reason. But it sort of worked. So I was watching, and you only get to do it once each round. So I was waiting, is Leon going to play a water bird? No. Is Garth going to play a water bird? And there are other ones where with different types of food, with different types of predatory behaviours, there was enough of those little abilities to almost have you wanting to pay attention to what all the other people are doing. And then you've got that scoring between the rounds where, for example, we had, you know, the most eggs in any type of nests or the most eggs in a certain type of nest where, you know, I'm getting some eggs, but then you have your turn and you get more eggs and I have to count your eggs and think, do I need to get more eggs this turn or are you going to get more eggs? So there is that ability to sort of keep you interested between turns.
But also just very quickly, you don't really have that time to switch off because in a 3 or 4 player game, it'll be your turn before no time at all.
Yes.
Because there's not a lot of thinking. It will be back around to your turn. All you really need to pay attention to is that card still there that I want?
Yeah.
Are those dice still there that I want for the resources? And kind of hope they still are. Mm. And luckily enough, it's around to your turn quick enough that it's even if you switched off, you'll be switched back on very quickly.
Yeah, you'd think that.
Well.
So Mark and I had a slightly different experience to Leon. We played at 5-player.
Yeah.
Now, 5-player was long and certainly not recommended by anyone we spoke to at the whole convention.
I don't know if I saw anyone else play it at 5, to be perfectly honest. But also, how long was it?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I don't think... But the thing is, I don't think it was, say, 2 hours long.
And
3 or 4 of you had never played it before. So that's... arguably not long in
it's
this
not
day
long,
age, but it's not ideal.
It felt long, though.
It felt long.
And, look, part of that was that, you know, a couple of the players weren't having that much fun, got a bit distracted, and, you know, perhaps didn't care about their turns maybe as much as they should have.
And that's all it takes. You can play with the best game in the world. If you've got that, that's pretty much end of story.
So, look, I mean, for me, I think the theme certainly comes through.
Yeah.
The bird abilities are all in keeping... And I'm not a ornithologist.
A twitcher.
I don't know that your barn owl will only eat things that are 75 centimetres or less, but I'm going to assume that the designers or the artist or someone does. So I trust that that'll be thematically correct within the scope of the game.
Yeah.
And it does look great. But we're talking about 45 minutes to an hour and a bit of my time. And in our experience, I would not play this over so many other things.
Yeah.
It is very much, for the most part, the solitaire puzzle of what's the best possible move I can do on my turn to either get myself further ahead on each round's goal, which, as you say, Leon, you might get 4 points or six. It's not a huge amount. No. We were getting scores from 60 up to maybe 80, 90 points.
Yep.
So they all chip away at it, but it's not going to be, as you say, probably game-changing. It certainly didn't help that one or two players switched off, because I certainly don't feel I played my strongest game, especially in the last round or so. It was like, we kind of agree that the table's done here, but let's just see this through to fruition.
Yeah.
And look, I just don't think it does anything exceptionally well, apart from looking great.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna chirp in again for a second, because I feel like it's funny. Halfway through the game, I think I said, I see now, this is like terraforming Mars for boring people with short attention spans. But I feel like that was a little bit harsh.
Maybe why I like it, though, to be fair.
And look, I feel like for a large portion of our hobby, as we said, where an hour or so is that sweet spot,
yeah,
three, four players, and I can see it could be a good couples game as well, you know, is a sweet spot. I think there are plenty of itches that it scratches. I think there are maybe other games that scratch those same inches better, but probably not
in that time.
In the time yeah. frame. So, you know, I feel like I'm on the mid branch between you down in the roots and you up in the leaves.
Well, I would certainly compare this more to Gizmos than I would to Terraforming Mars,
yeah,
just in terms of the engine building nature of it more so. And I would much rather play Gizmos, which you can easily knock over in 30-ish minutes, 30 to 45,
yeah,
and I think it's more interesting. I think it also looks great, especially the 3D ball pit thing. But I would much rather play Gizmos or indeed Terraforming Mars than play this.
Yep.
I'm more than happy to try it with a smaller player number, okay, and maybe my opinion will be different. But for me, it's probably the least favourite Stonemaier game I've played.
Ooh.
Yeah. And on that bombshell, any more puns you want to get out of the way before we throw to a song?
Look, I think we have covered everything, and I don't want to say anything more and get egg on my face.
There we go.
Let's get the duck out of this segment.
All right. Where the Dice Man cometh, it's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll be back to talk all about BorderCon from Friday, Saturday, Leon Sunday, Monday. After this song, here we are.
Pelican!
Hi, my name's Jenna. You're listening to the Dice Men Cometh, yearly attendees of BorderCon, the nicest guys from Tassie.
That was Spiderbait with Shazam!
Shazam!
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, lads, we are going to talk briefly about BorderCon. We will be talking about it, yes, for the next 6 months, as we tend to, when we focus a bit more each week on specific games we played. But we're going to now just talk about some random categories that we came up with and to give people a rough idea of what they might be hearing in the next few months or so. So, Marky Boy, did you want to start us off?
Perhaps? Yeah, well, look, I'll start off by saying that I think we put our list together, I think we ended up playing something like 38 or 39 games in total between the three of us over the weekend.
You might as well just say it was you and Garth, to be honest.
Well, I think there were a couple, like, so Wingspan, you played Wingspan at one stage, and yep, when Garth and I played it.
Yep.
So that was counted twice. I think there might have been a couple of games of Red 7 in there, which was just a filler we played.
We all played Flamme Rouge at different times.
Correct. Yeah. Yep. But apart from that, so even if it's only, say, 35,
yep,
35 different games, and we're talking games that stretch from 5 minutes,
yep,
to 4+ hours. I'm
correct,
looking at you, Pulsar, 2049, 2849.
That wasn't the only one that went that long.
No, no, no. But yeah, so look, a huge amount of games. Let me start with my greatest, the best game I played on the weekend, talking about the game itself, not so much the experience, but the game.
You're talking, yep, about a mechanical,
yeah.
The experience, this game ticked all the boxes that you look for in a game.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, I had a great time playing it as well. But firstly, I want to say I clearly made the right decision by not being brave enough to teach this game to you guys myself.
Yep.
Of course, I'm talking about Brass Birmingham, the new version of the classic Martin Wallace game with extra little bits, with extra beer included, that this was my copy. I took it along with me, took about just all of my hand luggage weight to get it there. But we had our fabulous friend Rachel, who had played it a couple of times before, and she took on teaching it. Firstly, let's just say she did an absolutely amazing job, because it's not incredibly that there are a lot, you know, complicated and lots of rules, but it's sort of like, well, if you want to do A, you have to do B, then C, then, and there's lots of conditions to be able to doing things, and the way it all fits together is quite a puzzle.
And I think possibly during the time, because I played this game with you, we stopped for a lunch break. I walked around and there was another table playing Brass Birmingham and another one playing Lancashire. So at least once there was maybe three games of this going on at once, which is pretty, pretty cool. But you're right, this game, from a mechanical point of view, makes perfect sense that this was re-implemented, reprinted with the Lancashire and Birmingham versions. And look, as far as Wallace games go, I've not played the length and the breadth of them, but I am starting to chip away at them. This was an exceptional gaming experience. Yeah. And although it is daunting when you set up your player boards and you look at the board and go, what's going on? It's not that tricky. And the reason it's not super tricky is because you're essentially playing the same game back to back. You're playing it with water, then you're playing the same game with tracks.
Yeah, so you have the canal era, complications, and then the rail era. Some things, if you've played right, will stay between the two eras, but for most part, you're sort of starting again. Anyway, look, I'm so glad I own it. I'm so glad that you played it with me, Garth, because now you're going to teach it to the rest of our friends.
That's absolutely fine.
And I don't have to. And but I'm so looking forward to playing it again. And I think it's going to be one of those games that people say, oh, we should play that again, because it just was so much fun. And I think the changes they've made to it, because I had played the original Brass many, many years ago, I think the changes they made in Birmingham just free it up enough so that you aren't getting, like, card screwed or cold screwed or you know, it doesn't make it so hard for you. There's always something you can do.
No doubt we'll talk about that when we actually do what we've been playing of that, because it'll deserve it. Leon.
Yes. Mine is probably, just because I like saying it so much, it's probably Teo to... And I know...
like saying it properly?
I apologise to everyone out there for my ignorant pronunciation of it, but I just look at that word and go...
Teotihuacan.
Teotihuacan. There you go. And the simple fact that, was it my most fun experience? No, we'll get to that in a minute. But from an actual game's perspective, I think this is a game which is going to be around for a very long time, because something that I bang on about constantly, same as Mark goes on about art, I go on about replayability.
Mm-hmm.
This game, not only does it look great, because you've got your cool little Mahjong pyramid in the middle, and the board itself with all the little art bits and pieces very much reminds me of an Eno Tool type of board. There's little stuff going on everywhere, which makes it fun to look at during your downtime. But every action, every scoring mechanism, everything on this entire game can be different every time you play it, because the boards can be flipped over in certain ways. All the little scoring things can be changed around. There's so much replayability and variety to everything of this game that you could, I near guarantee, you could play this game, say, 3-4 times in a day, and each game would feel completely different. Not really. I played this with four, and it was a learning experience for three of us. We knocked this in less than 2 hours, I think. Quite easily. And it's one of those games you look at the board and you go, oh, God, there's a lot of numbers, there's a lot of symbology. But other games, like Batman, I'm looking at you, where you have to print out a player aid and go, these are all what the 20 symbols in this game means. You look at it, and once they have the game explained to you, which was done by LFG Charles quite expertly, we looked at all the board and went, oh, okay, so you go there to get that, you go to that, to that. Perfect sense.
Yes.
Makes absolute perfect sense. So awesome. In that sense, like I said, I can see this being around for a very long time. And people that like a Euro game and like a point salady game, absolutely give it a crack.
Fantastic.
Garth.
So for me, there are a couple of candidates. But I'm not going to talk about any one of them except the one that for me, Brass Birmingham was exceptional game. But I can't talk about that one because you've talked about it. For me, it was Container. Container is a beautiful, and I'm talking 10th edition.
I was going to say, it'd want to be. Yeah,
it's beautiful. It is expensive.
Yes.
It's not mine, unfortunately. But it is just a game about making containers of stuff. And in our particular game, there was the house rule, which is you name your container. So there are five different resources. And we'd have scarabs, and we had teacher's chalk, and we had prosthetic limbs. And we had
silk stockings,
and something, a dignity.
Dignity.
We were making dignity. That was me. So we had five different goods.
Garth was selling his dignity. What a surprise.
Exactly. Shocking. And you can only ever produce one of each type of good at maximum. So you're producing goods. Other players are buying the goods that you've produced so that they can export them. You then have to go to their player board to take it to the island where there's an auction and you've got to try and win that. So it's all about this interconnected closed economy for the most part, where there's some little bits and pieces to the side where money can come in and go out of the economy. But geez, it was elegant and simple, and I think with the right group of people, a joy to experience.
And this was one we did play with five.
We did play with five. We played it with Ella and with Hammond and with Daniel.
Yeah, yeah. And look, thank you so much to Hamface for his copy of the game that we played. He does lots of board game stuff on Instagram. Hamface, I think, is his Instagram name. But Hammond, as you said, this game is perfect for five because you want the five different goods.
Absolutely.
You want five people making five different choices about what things they want and what things they don't want. And the way that you, nothing has any value of itself. It's that thing of, well, if I can make for one, and if I can sell it for two, and then if I can buy it for three and then sell it for four. And it's like that little puzzle in your head where you're trying to crunch the numbers. And at the end, I don't know that anyone had any idea of how anyone else was doing apart from themselves, because that little internal puzzle is fascinating.
Yeah, for something that's so mechanically simple. And again, I would love to talk about it, but
yeah,
we'll get to it eventually, maybe. I had such a wonderful time with that. So Container was my pick for maybe the most elegant game.
Okay, so we talked about what was the best game, but then so often, you know, we talked about with Wingspan that maybe even though the game was good, the experience was not so good in our case, Garth. What was your best experience playing a game on the weekend, Leon?
Well, mine's kind of boring because it's been the same as it has been for the last 3 years, and that is playing Luchador Mexican Wrestling Dice with Renee, my brother from a distant mother, and our two Queensland friend, Aos and John. And this year we played a tag team match, me and Renee versus the two Queenslanders.
Yeah, wow.
And we were convinced we could take them down. And we did so damn good, and they still bloody won. And then after that, we did something which we've never done before, was we had Renee had homebrewed a battle royale mode for the game. So the game itself only plays up to four people, but he had worked out a way for basically an unlimited amount of number of people to play it, because we ended up having six people in the ring all at once. And so once somebody got knocked out, somebody else would come in.
Yeah.
And he's actually going to put it up on BGG at some point.
Fantastic.
Yeah. For other people to do it. And we've come up with next year, I'm going to bring my copy and we're going to have two rings next to each other. And it's going to be a thing called War Games. Anybody that's into wrestling will know what that is. But that was amazing fun. We put on masks. It was Saturday night after dinner, which is now the tradition. We had an absolute blast. And then soon after that, what I would pick, if it wasn't for Luchador, is that I played Just One, which is a game I've banged on about already.
Yes.
Which is up there for my game of the year already, even though it's so simple and it kind of feels silly saying that.
And a Spiel des Jahres nominee.
Yep. I played this with eight people, so someone had put in extra little standees in it, because you can only play this one to seven, but literally all you need is something to stand a card on to play it with more, and a texter. I played this with eight people, all of which I kind of knew but didn't really. Most of them were listening to this show, which was lovely. Also, we were all, especially me, quite drunk by that point, and we're just chatting away. We played Just One for nearly 2.5 hours,
yeah, wow. Okay.
Which sounds ridiculous because we gave up kind of on the scoring and just kind of kept playing.
Yeah.
And several other games of Just One started around us that were over before we'd finished and just kept going. But we had an absolute blast. And in that situation, in that atmosphere, that game was perfect for that. Like, there was a game of Time's Up over in the corner, similar type of feel. And any game that can compete with Time's Up and that sort of atmosphere, you know, has done something well.
Yes.
Awesome. What about you, Garth?
All right, so for me, again, couple of really fantastic experiences. One was a Flom Rouge game, but I'm not going to talk about it just because Flom Rouge is not a new game. It's an amazing game, but not a new game to me. So the ones that have come down to for me are Belratti. So Belratti, tiny little card game that Aos showed us. So this was myself, Aos, John, Joshua, and Renee. You know who you are. A simple game which is all fully co-op. So it's a teams. The players are either cats who are, so that are looking to buy art, or Owls, who are the artists. And basically, you're trying to work together to pick the real art and the real theme versus some forgeries that this evil Balratty is trying to get in. Sounds silly, but is an amazingly fun experience. And he's going to get redone, reprinted, so there'll be a new copy of that at some point. I also wanted to talk about just how damn good Red 7 is, because I had some really good games of Red 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, not new.
I'd forgotten how good that game was. I've got one coming in the mail very soon. I forgot how good it was.
Yeah, and look, all I want to say really quickly is that one of the most interesting experiences I had was playing a game that is edutainment. And we're talking, well, I'm talking about this little game that's called Real Talk.
Mm.
A lovely guy, Nick, came and showed it. And asked, almost straight off the bat, I think, approached you, Mark, and said, I'd just like to find some time to play with you guys and get some feedback. And without going into too much detail, it's this sort of edutainment game where you're having conversations between each other, trying to answer questions that are on the card. Nothing new. However, the educational side of things and in terms of a career tool, I guess, it's fascinating. I'm really curious to see how that progresses.
Yeah, I think Nick had designed it as a job from the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne, where they're looking to use it for team building and for all sorts of training. And, yeah, it was quite fascinating. Look, for me, I am going to go back to an old game because I actually haven't played this game that often. Flom Rouge. It was actually only, I think, my third...
Oh, it came out last year? Was it
third game? No, I've only played it 3 times.
I played it once.
And, look, in the past, I've sort of gone, yeah, it's okay. And, look, I don't know if it was just the group of people. We played it with Richard and his partner, Sarah, and not to be confused with Sarah or your Sarah, and Brendan. Mm-hmm. So there's 5 of us, and then with one robo-rider. And it was just that time of the night, late on a Saturday night, where it was hilarious fun. We had my first play with the Meteo expansion, so we had different types of weather blowing us all over the place, and I just had an absolute ball with it. And if you have not tried that game, what are you waiting for?
Mm. We're going to be doing it again tonight.
Yes.
Just that simple. All right, so next we've got Surprise of the Con. How about you start, Garth?
Surprise. All right.
Surprise.
Well,
if you don't know it off the top of your head, I can tell you what mine is.
No. So my surprise is probably Underwater Cities, which was the first game I think we played on Friday morning, Friday.
I think it was the first. So I played Wingspan first off and you guys went and played that.
And this is a game that is thematically you're building underwater cities and you're trying to feed them and build money and get stuff and end up with more victory points than anyone else.
Yep.
In actual fact, I don't think it does the theme very well. It doesn't matter whether it's underwater. It could be a space city. It could be an earth city. It could be any form of engine building and construction thing. But I really enjoyed the last 2/3 of it. I was very surprised at how much I wasn't enjoying the start and how much I did enjoy the end.
Yeah, I was looking over a few times at you guys playing that. Neither of you looked terribly pleased, which is because this is actually a game on my list of stuff to play. And it just so happened that I was going to do Wingspan. I was like, I'll get to Underwater Cities later. And then after seeing the experience you guys had with it and just went, I think I'll skip it, actually.
No, look, I'd happily play it again, but I would...
Not play it with 5?
Well, we didn't. We played it with 4. But I would almost put a prerequisite on it that you've got to have read the rule book or practiced it or asked some questions first, because that first round took an eternity, and then it got fun.
Well, I was going to say, you guys played for, what, three hours or more?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it based on the first 45 minutes of the experience.
Okay, well, for me, my surprise, we talked on a previous episode about the list of games we wanted to play, and this game was on my list just because I'd heard some reasonably good things about it, and I was curious. And this is Newton, the game of Renaissance scientists and philosophers. And I think why it became more of a surprise than perhaps it would have been is on the first day I said, oh, you played, I saw a few copies around, have you played Newton, what do you think? And I got a very lukewarm reaction from the people that I asked, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, I don't know if I want to play it anymore. So I was going into it with quite low expectations.
It's also very brown. browny, greeny colour palette.
Yeah, look, it's quite traditional Euro-looking, but I had an absolute blast. Renee, our great friend, Wrestling Renee, taught this game. Garth, you played, and Charles from LFG as well, the four of us. And I had a blast, and I have felt lately like I've been falling out of love with Euro games because I really am into the narrative, the story, games that not so much legacy games, but campaign games, games that build a story as you play. And a lot of Euro games is just to do a thing, get a points for the thing, and sell a thing, and buy a thing. And what I found with this was there was a few different things where you could travel through Europe and gain knowledge as you travel through Europe. You've got apprentices that go and do research for you, and they go along different technology tracks and get better and better. You have
We're not your, doing a what we've
your
been playing,
library
Mark.
Of knowledge, but anyway, all the little bits and pieces were very thematic, even though it didn't tell a story as such. All the pieces fitted together so well, and I had a blast.
I had a really good time too, and I can see that game being played with four players in an hour and a half-ish. It crams in a hell of a lot of game with so many paths to victory.
And
so
I think maybe the reason you liked it so much, and maybe the reason you also thought you were falling in love with Euro games, did not before that you guys played Carpe Diem? Just before that?
We'll get to that. Don't worry about that. So
my surprise of the con, Ink and Gold, which I'd never played before.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a small game. It's been around for ages. It has been renamed 20,000 different times. It was fun. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And my surprise of the con to Garth's probably happiness was Flamme Rouge.
Hey!
I thought it was an absolute... I had heard about you go on about it. I'd seen it and like, yeah, interesting. Racing game. I've had a bad taste in my mouth from racing game for years. There's only one or two that kind of like, they're all right. None of them have ever gone, this is excellent.
Yeah.
This game is an absolute belter. It is near a 10 out of 10. It is excellent. Yeah. To be fair, I could be tainted by the fact that I won, and I won from being leading the entire game, which apparently is near impossible, and I pulled it out, yes, based on luck. A little bit of skill. I did actually plan some things. But, yeah, it is excellent. It is a shame that this game is on the expensive side for what it is. Mm. A little bit, 20% money off this and the expansions, I think this could be in every house quite happily.
Well, there will be, I believe, a big box expansion coming out somewhere towards the end of the year, so maybe hold off for that.
Yep.
All right. We've got any other?
A couple more minutes left.
We've got anything really, really quick? Are we just going to say?
Yeah. Well, look. I mean, let's. Leon mentioned disappointment.
Yeah.
Quickly, Garth, did you have a disappointment?
Absolutely. Is it the same as your disappointment, Mark?
Depends. What's your disappointment?
Oh, come on, lads.
We can compare disappointments. Look, I don't want to jump the gun, but I didn't have fun with Carpe Diem.
Yeah. Well, I.
It's a Spiel-nominated game.
Yeah, and it is, just talking about that, falling out of love of Euro games, it's just like a melange of different Euro games where it's like they've taken a bit from this one, a bit from that one, a bit from that one, chucked them all in, taken all the colour out of it so that it looks boring as bat stuff.
And, well, there is Chicken Farm, so as boring as chicken stuff.
And as I said, whether it's my disappointment, I don't know, but it's God awful.
Well, we'll talk about it because no doubt we'll be doing that because you have now played all the Spiel and all the Kenner, and Leon and I aren't far behind. Leon?
Yeah, I'm slightly disappointed. My disappointment is that Llama wasn't worse because Llama is fine. It's nothing amazing. Considering that weekend I had played No Thanks and Red 7, they're 10 times the game. Yeah. But Llama is all right, but in its company in the Spiel Awards, it's not in the same league as the other two.
No, it's got a lot of competition with Just One and also Werewords.
Yeah, it's fine, but
Well, look, I just want to mention, so I played the two, I think I'd say, be right in saying these two are the sort of the big Roll and Ride is a big thing at the moment.
Yes.
And Welcome To and Railroad Inc. Seem to be two of the most popular ones. I played both of those games. And I was, look, they were both okay. But I was just expecting to be blown away because of how much people have been talking about these things, and I certainly was underwhelmed by both of them.
Never been blown away by any Roll and Ride game, and I'm not seeing it happen anytime soon. We didn't play the dinosaur one, though, which looks kind of cool.
My last little disappointment or dud or whatever is actually going to be Sushi Roll.
Yeah.
The dice version of Sushi Go.
Yeah.
Because it occupies the same amount of time as Sushi Go.
Sushi Go Party especially, yeah.
And it just replaces cards with dice. And I don't know, there's not enough hidden information, which there is when you're passing the cards around to each player. Gimme Sushi Go any day over Sushi Roll. Looks great. But are they jumping the sushi shark? I don't know.
And give me King of Tokyo if you want to chuck dice. Yeah, or even Istanbul dice, which is obviously a little bit more complicated, anyway, but good.
Let's end on a positive.
Yeah.
I am positive that that BorderCon was an amazing event.
Oh, yes.
I am positive that you will get sick of hearing the Dice Men talking about, firstly, BorderCon, then BorderCon, as we get increasingly sick of each other talking about BorderCon. I am positive that we'll be back again next week, and I am positive that this cold will hopefully disappear.
And look, thank you so much. Before we go, thank you so much to every single listener that came up and said hello over the weekend. There were so many of you. It was amazing.
Yes.
Our egos were just barely fit in our hotel room, but it's so lovely to meet you all in person. So lovely when you tell us how much you like listening to the show. So lovely to get some critical feedback, which we can put in place. We love to get that. But mainly just lovely to meet all the lovely people out there that listen to this show. It was amazing.
Yes.
And on that note,
yeah,
that positivity, we do it for you all. And we got to go and play Florham Rouge Six Player.
Woo-hoo!
We will see you next week. We are the Dice Men.
Oh, I love this song. Excuse me, everyone. Just wanted to pop in and say hello. It's Mark here. And welcome all the new listeners. What I'd love for you all to do, if you haven't done it before, is jump onto iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever you think we're worth, it makes a big difference to helping us get the podcast out to all the people there who don't know about it already. Of course, we'd love you to support us on Patreon as well, and to share the love on all your social media feeds. But if you could do the iTunes review for us, that would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, back to the track.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.